So, Rick, I was going to try to do this without getting behind the mic. Do you think am I speaking loud enough for everyone to hear me back there? If not, I can move back. It's just a little easier to see the screen here. So. Yeah. So raise your hand if you can't hear, and I'll go to the mic if necessary. Couple of things. How many of you, let's have a show of hands here, are in the publishing business? I see 1, 2, 3, radio, yeah, that counts. Okay, how many of you have blogs, either personal or company blogs? Okay, then you're all in the publishing business too. That's the point I wanted to make. That's what we're talking about here today, and it's a couple of really big topics. I mean, I could speak for hours on this, but we're going to try to cut through it with an overview here. But I think it's important that you guys get a chance to ask whatever questions you want. How many of you now have a company blog for the company you either own or are employed by? Raise your hands up real high. About looks like about a third of the group, maybe. How many of you have a personal diary kind of a blog? How many of you have like spouses or children that have personal blogs? Okay, yeah. Okay, how many of you think blogging is a whole load of crap? How many of you have doubts that you would ever blog or ever need a blog or want a blog or anything like that? Do we have any? Okay, we do have some doubters there. Okay, well, and you know, the way this is kind of worded, it's almost like I'm going to try to convince you that you should do it. Or, you know, I don't think that probably a lot of you need convincing, but maybe some of you still do. And again, we need to remember that blogging isn't for every single company out there. It is, however, a very wise thing to do for most all startups and emerging firms that I work with that are doing something innovative and have something to talk about that they want the world to know about. So, but certainly it's not for everyone. So, for better or worse, I guess I'm a professional blogger. And, you know, as we were alluding to there a second ago, whoops, going too fast here, blogging is everywhere. It's gone beyond going mainstream. I mean, we're seeing, you know, how many individual bloggers do you know that have turned into media companies? From TechCrunch to Huffington Post, Gawker, there's tons of them. You probably all read blogs. How many of you read blogs on a daily basis? At least one blog. And I guess it depends on what you count as a blog. Some of these are really highly sophisticated news organizations that employ scores of people. So here are some places where I blog. This is my main blog, which I launched in 2005. Just around three of my passions, technology, surfing, and blogging. And I subtitled it Comes in Waves. Another blog that I launched a couple years ago, New Media Wise, to talk about marketing. And I don't keep that one up as well as I should, so I'm guilty like everybody in that respect. I also contribute to a site called Minovate, which was started by a group of us that just had a passion for innovation in Minnesota in internet and web marketing, and we thought there wasn't really a good outlet for that, so we decided to launch a blog and start writing. And we've grown it into a weekly podcast. I think we're up to about episode 65 now. I've contributed several times to one of the top technology blogs, Read Write Web, which again was started by a guy in his bedroom in New Zealand and is now staffed with several professional writers and managers, and you know, has hired a CEO, and they're all over the world. They're virtual. And then I've also contributed to a blog on cloud computing called Cloud Avenue, which is based out of the Bay Area. And of course, I've blogged in many other places, guest posting, and sometimes for my clients. And my main blog is syndicated by several others. I love it when people pick up my blog posts and run them wherever they want to run them. You know, it's all about sharing and getting your thoughts and projects out there, letting people know what you're doing. But a clarification I want to make is this is my macro blog. Now, we bloggers use the term long-form blogging. That's the way we think of our original blogs. But there's this little micro-blog thingy that you probably heard about. And I can't believe I got this far into the presentation without saying the word Twitter. But now there it is. That's my micro-blog. Okay, so I spend a lot more time now micro-blogging than I do long-form blogging. But it's so crazy that now there's something that I have, and a lot of us do in the blogging business, if you will. We have something that sort of fits in between, or at least it does for me, and that's Posterous. And this is a great service. You can literally email anything. So you write an email, you email it to Posterous, boom, it goes on your Posterous blog. So that kind of fits into what I call the vast expanse between my long-form blogging and my 140 characters at a time, and I do some sort of medium-length post there. I also treat it like a social bookmarking site. When I find something interesting, an interesting link, I'll just email the link, maybe attach an image, and just say, I thought this was a really good article, and I want to remember it. I want to go back. In fact, I did that for some of the charts you'll see later in this presentation from articles that I grabbed that I thought were interesting about statistics relating to social media. This is just a screenshot of a recent post I did that I actually first wrote on Minovate, and then I just kind of cross-posted it here and pointed people back to Minovate about our friends at Alvenda getting a nice round of early stage capital, Series A capital. This is an example of a post on Minovate that was our weekly podcast last week on the iPad introduction. Our friend Julio Opata, Ojeda Zapata at the Pioneer Press was out there at the event, and so we had him on as a guest. And the four of us, you can see, I'll use my little laser here, Steve Borsch, Tim Elliott, myself, and Phil Wilson, a former radio guy, by the way, is one of our colleagues on this. But Steve is another tech head like me. Steve and Tim are obviously very much into WordPress, the platform that we use to build this site, and very much into following technology trends. So over here, we're just looking at some of our most popular posts from the last year. And obviously, I don't have a live internet connection here, but you can scroll down and see all our posts going back 2 years now on that one. So what are we going to talk about today? Corporate blogging, and a lot of people will go, what? You know, why would corporations want to blog? And that's a serious, legitimate question. There's no doubt that individual blogging is much more accepted, and is the whole concept of blogging is really much more about individuals with a passion to write about something. But nonetheless, there is a place for company blogging. But we can talk about why people would blog, why companies would blog, what's required, types of blogs, what to blog about, deciding who blogs, ways to use a blog, and then we'll get to the bigger picture. The whole social media universe. So if you do have any questions, please, raise your hand and just shout them out as we go through. Otherwise, we'll have plenty of time at the end, I hope. So what is corporate blogging? Well, Debbie Weil, who wrote a very good book called The Corporate Blogging Book a couple of years ago, defines it this way. It's the use of blogs to further organizational goals. Think of a blog as an e-newsletter, viral marketing campaign, open channel for your customers to talk to you, low cost, easy to use, always free website. Blogging really has little, if any, costs associated with it, except, of course, the time to write it and maintain it. And, of course, corporate blogging tends to get get people when they first think about it or talk about it. Gee whiz, will we run into problems? Will I get fired for blogging the wrong things? Do we need to have a blogging policy? All these things. And Debbie deals with all that in her book. I'd recommend the book. So why would you blog? Well, it's all about telling your story or advancing your passion. Now, can a business be passionate about something? No, but one or more people in that business better be, right? I mean, these are the people that are naturally going to blog. And they may not think of themselves as writers, but I can tell you I have seen scores, hundreds of people who would never have, you know, years ago ever thought they'd ever be a writer, just get into blogging like it was nothing. And all of a sudden, and I put up my friend Steve Borsch at Minovate. This guy was an enterprise software sales guy. And he's, you know, he just had such a passion about technology and new technology, especially in innovation, that he started writing. And the guy can run circles around me. I mean, he can put out more blog posts than me. And I've been writing for 30 years, you know. So it's about doing your thing. You know, you want to connect and engage with your customers. That's the only reason why you should be doing it. And of course, it's all about getting attention, building buzz. You know, blogging and social media have really affected marketing and PR more than any other field. In fact, I've been in marketing for a long, long time, and I haven't seen the change that, like, this has brought to the field in all that time. I mean, desktop publishing was big back in the 80s, and we were all over it as soon as it came out, you know. We were Apple customers from the get-go, and, you know, 84. But then, you know, the web started becoming mainstream about 94, 95. Obviously, that had an impact on business, but nothing like this. This is way, way bigger. So why else would you want to blog? Well, you want to be or become a thought leader. And a friend of mine out in the Bay Area by the name of Brian Solis has a site called PR 2.0, and his answer to how do you become how do you get positioned as a thought leader on the web, and his answer is, well, first you have to be one. But, you know, he doesn't mean to be, you know, silly about that, but it's like you've got to have something to say, you know, and you've got to feel like you've got a message that somebody out there, and whatever wide or narrow audience you want to reach, is going to want to hear about. You've got to be willing to share, and you've got to be, you know, out in front to a certain extent. But the best reason of all to blog is search engines love it. And fresh content is all about Google juice. You know, so my answer to companies that ask why would they do it, there's reason enough to do it. Why wouldn't you do it? I'm sorry, Mr. President, Mr. Kowalski is not available to take your call. He's right in the middle of an important online search for cool widgets for his blog. Okay, now, and there are CEOs out there right now that you would be amazed who are sitting and dealing with their blogs at any given moment. But, you know, let's look at some hard data around that search engine thing. This is a guy I met on Twitter. And, you know, I meet wonderful people every day on Twitter that I feel an instant bond with for whatever reason. This guy's out in Seattle, happens to be a member of the Surfrider Foundation, which I am, and I think he found me that way. And you know, so I follow him now, and I noticed in my Twitter stream the other day that he was retweeting RT a tweet about a study that HubSpot did, which is a company in Boston that does a lot of surveys. They're all about marketing technology and about social media technology. And they surveyed a fairly large sample of companies. I forget what the sample size was, but they actually have shown that those companies whose website have a blog attached to them are getting twice the number of inbound links to their website. That's what search engines like. That's one big thing they like, is inbound links. So again, blogging has that amazing advantage if you know how to use it right. That's the book I was speaking about earlier. This is another one that I would highly recommend. I know the author, David Merriman Scott. This has been a Business Week bestseller. He's just now coming out with the second edition. It's about 2.5 years old, as is this one. Debbie's probably due to do an update on this one, too. But, you know, it's still pretty doggone good. I mean, it's a very, very good book. But the New Rules of Marketing PR takes a little different approach. David is a content marketer like myself, came out of the newspaper business. He was the VP of marketing for Knight Ridder Newspapers going way back. But he's now he pretty much just does speaking and writing books. He's on about his fifth book now, I think, and I'll tell you about another one of his coming up here soon. But I would highly recommend both these books. Here's a couple others. Now Is Gone is co-written by Brian Solis, the fellow I mentioned a little earlier. He's in the Bay Area. Jeff Livingston's in D.C. And they call this a primer for new media on new media for executives and entrepreneurs. Charlene Lee and Josh Burnoff were both Forrester analysts. Charlene has since gone and started her own firm. They wrote a book called Groundswell, which preceded this one. That's very, very good. It's been out about 3-4 years now. This one came out following that, and it focuses just on the marketing piece of the equation. So again, excellent book. Let me go back to these. These are very new books that just came out. I don't even have my own copies, so I didn't photograph these. I just grabbed the images off the web. But Chris Brogan is a very well-known social media expert and author. And I don't know if this is his first book, but Trust Agents has just come out within the last month, I believe. And he was just in town speaking yesterday. Did anybody go to the Minnesota Business event? Was it good?
Excellent.
We saw Chris on Monday night, a little tweet up we organized, because we all know each other through the social media world. And a week or two prior to that, Tara Hunt was in town. This is her new book, The Woofy Factor, and she's all about social capital. And she is just excellent. Again, if you want to know what it takes to win in online communities, this is a book for you.
What's the word woofy mean?
What's the word what?
Woofy mean.
That's her word. You know, it's her word for social capital. Okay. You know. She probably explains it in her preface, you know. I haven't actually heard it, but you know, what social capital is what you earn from being out on the social web. You earn trust, and she talks about having deposits and withdrawals, you know, almost like the trust bank kind of, which isn't a new concept. But she makes it really, really fresh. And I have some slides in my presentation here from her her talk a couple weeks ago. It was at Best Buy. It was for the Social Media Club. But, you know, blogging isn't hard. It's I tell my clients and anybody that's a doubter that it's just like writing an email to a colleague. It's not any harder than that. It's not about writing the great American novel or the great American article or whatever. It's sitting down and writing an email. And we do that every day. It's the difference is it's out there for everyone. So my friend Doc Searles came up with the great definition several years ago now, I think, that blogging is like CC the world. How many of you remember the book, The Clue Train Manifesto? Any of you read that book? We got one guy here. Yeah, it's about 10 or 12 years old now, I guess. I think it came out in 98. Doc was one of the four authors of that book, which really predicted the whole social media explosion in 1998. And I had the good fortune of meeting these guys out on the conference circuit and some of the technology conferences I go to. And Doc is now a Bergman Fellow at Harvard. So Debbie puts out a nice list in her book on 10 tips for writing and really starting a corporate blog. So I'll just tick through these real quick. You know, obviously you've got to pick a topic, and she recommends, and and others do too, that the more specific you can make that, the better. The best blogs tend to be about a fairly narrow focus topic of technology or whatever, cooking, whatever. Find your voice. Now, that's the tough one. You know, you've got to have something to say and have a way of expressing yourself. And you know, that comes natural for some people, takes a little longer for others. Inviting a conversation, you've got to learn to get out there and comment on other people's blogs, and you've got to realize you want people to converse with you, and you have a channel for them doing that through your blog. And then she recommends how you can package things, and I'll get a little bit into how do you come up with content for a blog. This is a, whoops, I didn't mean to go that fast. Let me go back here. This is a common technique with bloggers, is to package things together like 10 tips like she did here, and five rules or seven ways. And you know, you have to always have links in your blog posts. It isn't just about writing, it's about sending people to other resources and sharing links, pointing to other blogs, hoping people will comment on your blog, and then you can comment on theirs, or attach what's called a trackback link. And you have to know how to write for web as opposed to print. It's different. And of course, you're always writing for Google. You know, it's all about Google. you've got to know what your important search terms are. And you're going to be sprinkling those, of course, throughout your website. That's what SEO is all about, search engine optimization, but you're also going to be sprinkling them throughout your blog post. And, you know, the search engines obviously like the blogs, the best blogs they like are the ones that are, you know, are frequently and consistently updated. And, you know, taking risks, you just have to get out there and start doing it. You know, you can't over-plan or over-perfect what you're doing. You know, you just, it's more about just getting out there and experimenting. And I love what Debbie says about dance like nobody's watching. So, is your company ready for a blog? Well, can you regularly update it? That's maybe the biggest question. But it isn't one that you need to get too hung up about, because there are ways to manage that. You need to have a writer or a group of writers. You can also have guest bloggers. That's a great way to pick up your variety of content. But you really have to have something to say about your industry or your market or the type of product or, you know, whatever, government regulations as relate to your business. And you need to read other blogs to understand that, obviously. Another thing that's going to help you a lot is if you have content assets, you know, newsletters, white papers, reports, studies. If you have stuff that's already online, you can repurpose a lot of that content and link to it. So the catch is, you know, it's easy to start a blog, but it's maybe not so easy to come up with that next 9, 10, 12, 14 blog posts. Here was a nice piece that was online just a few days ago from Ann Handley at marketingprofs.com in Boston, which is basically a blog that's grown into a whole media site. And she's giving tips, and there's a lot of small type here. I don't expect you to read it all. I tried to summarize it, but she recommends, you know, don't take everything on as a huge task. Create small pieces of content. Blogs can be small pieces, and you can think really small by going to Twitter and asking your Twitter followers what's important to them, and then, you know, build a blog post around that. You can bundle other posts many posts into an ebook or you can call it a white paper, and most people give those away freely, but some companies can't even charge for them. You can video record your talks, and obviously YouTube is becoming a serious content distribution platform for many firms, even B2B firms. And you can repurpose those on your blog and on Twitter and Facebook, of course. And you can post your PowerPoints to SlideShare. You can interview customers. I do that. I do interviews and create podcasts with this very thing I'm recording with right here. This is called Olympus LS10, and it's a fairly low-cost studio-grade handheld recorder. And I take it out to conferences, and I'll interview contacts or as she says here, luminaries, and post the MP3 on my blog. It's really easy. It's not hard. I'm not a big techie. I was using that thing the day after I bought it off Amazon for, I think, $199, and then I got that little tripod to put it on, which I kind of use as a handle. So a lot of my interviews I put on my blog at conferences where I'll interview startups or analysts or VCs. Real-time photos, or any kind of photos, really. How many of you have a Flickr account or some other photo-sharing account?
Anyone?
Yeah. I use Flickr just because it was kind of the early one that I started with, and I probably have close to 10,000 photos up there. But pretty much every industry event I go to, I do a set of photos, and I start uploading them while I'm there at the event, you know, during a break or when there's a boring speaker up, I'll be sitting there uploading my photos from my, you know, from my SD card. And by the time the event's over, I've got all my photos up there. What else did she say? Customer service is a great resource for content. Find out what your customers are contacting the company about. What's interesting to them? That's what you should be blogging about. So, and then going behind the scenes, you know, maybe uploading photos of something you're doing in the company, you know, inside the company, sharing things on Twitter. All these things are easy to do. And then she recommends that you don't silo your content. You got to sprinkle it about freely across all the platforms you're using. And companies are using all those platforms, Facebook, LinkedIn, YouTube. So transitioning now to social media, and how are we doing for time here? We got to cover social media here in 15 minutes if we can. This isn't easy. But your blog should really be the hub of your social media universe. If you think of it that way, you're in good stead, I think, where it's you know, it's really the focus and the center of your marketing and content strategy. It's really the main link you want to drive people to from whatever platform you're dealing with, and that in turn drives them to your website, which is where you want them to ultimately end up most times. So social media, as you very well know, is being incorporated into every aspect of business. There, I can't think of a part of a business function that it isn't impacting. So the most important skill required, that's it right there. And I put, I guess, number two to that. I didn't create a slide for this, but sharing. If you're not into sharing, you know, you're not into social media. And I've had someone actually approach me. I'll tell a little story. Where I was at a small event like this once, and I was the only one Twittering the event. It was a direct marketing seminar, and I was in the back. I came in late, and I thought, well, nobody's got their laptop open, you know, because usually when I go to events, people are, you know, working on their laptops and usually tweeting, live tweeting the event. So I'm the only one back there doing it, and I got a fairly quiet keyboard, you know. And one of the guys that was on the panel had invited me, and he's real social media savvy, and he knew I'd Twitter it, you know. But after the meeting, a lady came up to me, and she said, "What were you doing over there? You were really bothering me with your keyboard, you know." And I thought, well, I didn't think I was that loud, but I said I was tweeting about what was going on, what was being discussed. And, oh, okay, she didn't really know about Twitter. This was, you know, a year or more ago, so I could excuse her. But when I explained that I was just sharing with my followers what I thought they might be interested in about kind of what's going on, it was about mobile, okay? Who doesn't want to know about mobile marketing? You know, I've got tons of followers who love to know about it. So she actually looked at me, she said, "Why in the world would you want to share your knowledge And I looked at her, and I, you know, I think my answer was, well, why wouldn't you? You know, I mean, to me, it just, you know, if it isn't natural to share like that, then, you know, probably social media isn't for you. So what is it? Well, there it is. Brian Solis did this diagram about a year ago, actually, trying to show all the different parts of the social media universe. You could go blind looking at this thing. You know? I mean, he's got every logo he could think of all the different services, some of which are probably dead by now. But, you know, you got Flickr up here, and blog communities, and, you know, Twitter-specific things, video aggregations. That's what it's all about. But in the center is what he calls the conversation, the art of listening, learning, and sharing. So call it what you will, conversational marketing. We also use the term the participative web, consumer-generated media, user-generated content, self-publishing, citizen marketing. There's no end of the buzzwords, but the one that we're really at now is the real-time web, because all this is happening out there right at this moment. And I love this cartoon. This is like, hey there, mister. You can't go outside and play until you finish reading all your RSS feeds. So it's everywhere. And this is a great quote from Steve Rubel. He runs one of the, probably the most popular PR blog called Micro Persuasion. Today all media is social and all social is media. And it's democratizing the media big time, and none other than Rupert Murdoch is saying it, so it must be true. Because he rules about half the world of media, if not more these days. So lots of other books you can get out there and buy. I get a lot of them sent to me because as a part-time journalist, I'm on a lot of press lists, so I'll get review copies of things, or I'll request review copies. And this is just a small sampling of some of the ones that have hit my mailbox. A couple of good books on Twitter. This one's written by a local author, the fellow I mentioned earlier, the consumer tech reporter at the Pioneer Press, Julio Ojeda Zapata. He wrote this by interviewing about 36 companies that are using Twitter in their business, and he did this a year and a half ago. So he's working on an update on it now, I believe. This is a newer book that just came out, I think, within the last about 4 months or so, by another friend of mine by the name of Shell Israel out in the Bay Area. So he's speaking all over the world on the social media. This is an interesting thing that I wanted to show and share that Forrester Research does every quarter, I believe. And they call it the North American Technographics Empowerment Online Survey. And this is interesting because the base is U.S. online adults. And they look at everybody from the inactives, which they currently gauge at about 17%. They don't do crap online. But whoops, how did I do that? Okay, I didn't mean to.
Let's go back to play there.
At the top, we have all you bloggers out there. Your creators are 24%. Conversationalists, 33%. This would be the teenagers that have maybe given up blogging now and are doing everything in bite-sized chunks on Facebook, and, you know, they're updating their status, you know, 39 times a day or whatever, you know. And then we've got critics, collectors, joiners, but check this one out. Spectators. 70% of the online universe. These are the people reading. And, you know, they never comment on your blog. They really don't participate. They're just, you know, some would call them lurkers, but they're you know, they're the people you're trying to reach. So everybody can't be a blogger, and everybody will never be a blogger. And there are, you know, millions of blogs that were set up out there that are totally inactive because they didn't cost anybody anything to set them up. So some people have tried being bloggers and they bombed at it or lost interest in it. But by God, they're out there reading them. So that's Forrester Research. So why should a company do social media? Well, the simple answer is people expect you to. And surveys keep showing that. 93%. It's where the people are. These are recent Nielsen numbers. Time spent on social media sites up 82% year over year, led by Facebook and Twitter. So, is this big enough for you? Social networking is more popular than email now. And it's more popular than porn. But beyond that, it's about to overtake search as an activity online. So that's big stuff. So maybe you've heard of this little company, 350 million active users, average user 130 friends, average one fans two pages a month and is a member of 12 groups, 1 million developers of applications for Facebook. And there's this little site called Twitter. There it is again. I said it again. 18 million users and growing. It says here only less than 1% have more than 1,000 followers. That seems low to me, but that's certainly where I would be. And you know, and there's a ton of people out there with, you know, tens of thousands of followers, mostly the, you know, celebrity types. And driving it all big time, of course, is mobile. 4 billion mobile phones worldwide now, and I was surprised to see that, well, 100% of them have text capability, but 92% have browser capability. That seems high to me, but, you know, I guess I'll trust these statistics here for now, but 63% with a camera, which of course is one of the main ways that people share on social media these days. It's so easy to shoot a picture with my iPhone and attach it to a tweet, you know, and then it's up there on the YFrog service or the TwitPic service. And then somebody is saying mobile content's worth more than $71 billion. I don't know where they get that number, but it's big. This is a favorite of mine, the five stages of Twitter acceptance. So how many of you here are still at stage one, denial? Okay. Oh, so there are still some holdouts out there. But, you know, I have seen so many people go through these stages, I can't tell you. And I mean, I've seen scores of people that started from nothing and are now like the maddest Twitterers with I mean, like tens of thousands of followers. I know one lady, I almost thought she might be here, but she probably didn't know about the meeting. She's in the furniture industry, and now she's like the guru of social media for the furniture industry. She's being invited to speak all over the world. She already was a well-established consultant, but she saw the power of this thing and was blogging already and was writing and for publication and stuff like that. She jumped onto Twitter after I did, and she took off like a hockey stick on that thing. And I've seen so many more go through it. You know, the first step is, why would people want to know what you're having for breakfast? How stupid is this, you know? But then quickly people start, you know, well, I'll set up an account and see how it goes. And then, well, I'll start throwing links on there to my blog posts, you know, and being real self-serving about it all, you know. And pointing people to my press releases, you know, which is not real great Twitter practice, but certainly not doing it all the time. But then they'll start a little conversing, because you can talk back to people on Twitter. You can reply to their posts and so a lot of people get into it that way. But the ultimate step is when you start really publishing useful information that people read, and you're doing some one-to-one conversing as well, which is what I do. I rarely post anything without a link of some value. And that's what my Twitter page looks like. I just did a screenshot of it last night. Every time I look at it, it automatically updates when new tweets are coming in. So I'll sit and look at it for 2 seconds, and it'll be, you know, telling me, well, there's 20 new tweets that have come in since I looked at it. I mean, it's a pretty rapid stream. And, of course, I can look at it on my iPhone. Very easy, too, with any of hundreds of Twitter apps that are available for mobile phones or for the web, because they have an open API. So this is how I look at it on the web. And when I click on my own name back on that, when I just click on my name, it'll bring me to my own Twitter stream. And I just shot this last night. And you can see some of the announcements. And I love this one. I went over to the Apple Store to get two keycaps replaced last night. They gave me a whole new keyboard on my 2.5-year-old computer. So that was nice. And anyway, that's what Twitter looks like. And then what I do, okay, I talked about the real-time web. Here's what I do a good part of my day is I sit and look at a dashboard where I'm monitoring in real time on keywords. And this shows four columns, but I actually scroll back and forth 10 columns. And I'm looking at my, well, I'm looking at my own name to see who's talking to me or talking about me. And then I look at Minovate sometimes. Here's a couple of my clients, Business Card 2 and iCentera. And if you go over to, if I could scroll over to the right, you'd see a couple other clients and some keywords that are important to each of those clients. So I'm seeing who's talking about, well, in the case of Business Card 2, I'm seeing in real time who's talking about personal branding. I did it again. Which is one key term that they're very interested in. So they want to know who's out there blogging or talking about personal branding. And for iCentera, it's about sales enablement. So I'm monitoring those terms. Again, it's about listening and monitoring. So what are some objectives that companies might have to do social media? Here's a study that was just done that looked at what companies were saying about why they are interested in online communities, which is another term for social media. It's a kind of a specialized part of social media, but it all relates to the whole social media universe. It's generating word of mouth. That's the big one. Increasing customer loyalty, product brand awareness, increasing sales. Obviously, all these things. But one point I wanted to make about word of mouth is the thing that blogging does and social media is it quantifies word of mouth. Word of mouth was never very measurable, but it's the one thing that's the best kind of advertising there is, and everyone's always known that. But how do you know? You know, which half of your advertising works? You don't know. You know, but when people are talking about you in a positive way, that's great stuff. Well, blogging actually allows you to measure that in social media much more than in the real world, if we can call it that. I there's tons of companies out there that are forming around measuring social media and tracking all the metrics that go with it, and they have a lot of big expensive software platforms and ways of helping you measure, especially if you're a large company with millions of people, millions of customers like Coca-Cola or Best Buy or whatever. There are literally scores of these companies that are coming up with ways for you to measure it. But I loved what Tara said a couple weeks ago. She said, you know, the most meaningful metric is the rate at which people invite their friends to participate. And that's what social networking is certainly about, is friends. But that's what you want. You want evangelists out there. And that's how you get them, through social media. That's a easier, faster, better way to do it than traditional means. You know, how many of your customers want to tell the world how great you are? That's the thing to measure, if nothing else. And you'd be amazed at how quickly you'll see it happen when you're playing in this world. And then my friend David Merriman Scott, whose book I told you about a little earlier, came up with just kind of breaking it down to 61 words. You can buy advertising, or you can buy attention, advertising. You can beg the media for attention through your PR agency. You know, and you can bug people one at a time to get attention. That's sales, right? Or you can earn attention by creating something interesting and valuable and then publishing it online for free. A YouTube video, a blog, a research report, photos, Twitter stream, ebook, Facebook page. And that's his new book, Worldwide Rave, which he was talking about in town here about a year ago when I had him in town to speak to a social media breakfast. So that's it. That's where you can find me with a lot of my coordinates there. There's still a lot of places where you can be online, and you know, most of them I'm there at my name, and so certainly I've been a longtime player in most all of these social networking, you know, platforms, LinkedIn, Facebook, friend feed, and so forth. Rick?
Can you just jump in? It's 1 o'clock or thereabouts. Again, we have the room as long as we would like it. If you want to take off, please feel free to do that. Graham can stay longer for any questions. If you want the presentation, either reach out to Graham or myself.
So anybody got a question? Somebody must have by now. Okay, Kent?
Just wondering if you have any suggested guidelines for how much time a person should devote to this as a heavily professional person. You think you spend 24/7 doing this, or you can spend not really, but what's the sweet spot?
Well, you know, for a company, let's say a CEO or a senior management person, maybe a VP of marketing, you know, to launch a blog, they're going to probably put, you know, a good part of a week into fooling around with it. They, you know, you need to have a geek friend, probably a WordPress jockey would be the best platform to be using. But there are a number of platforms you can choose. And, you know, but you're going to want to eventually post 2 or 3 times a week as a minimum. So what are you going to devote to that? You know, each person has to answer that for themselves, but it's going to be, you know, probably when you're getting started, a few hours per post, perhaps. You know, but you can do it, and, you know, some people do it real early in the morning, some people do it at night, some people just do it as part of their catching up on news. You know, while they're reading the papers or reading online, they'll go, "Oh, I'm going to blog a quick thing about that," or "I'm going to copy paste that paragraph from that Wall Street Journal story and jump over to my blog and say, oh, I thought this was really a great insight." Click, 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 boom, it's published. You know, so it can be a real short amount of time, but you're gonna get better at it as you go along.
A couple quick questions, Graham. First, how are you deciding which context to post messages in? I mean, I see it, there's a number of different, you have Facebook, LinkedIn, Twitter,
yeah,
blog, poster. I mean,
how do I use them?
Yes.
Yeah, well, you know, I'm not your typical company blogger, but I replicate some. My tweets all go to my LinkedIn page right now. I was doing that on my Facebook page. And I only set up a Facebook page for business networking reasons. I have about 380 friends there, some family, but I'm never tweeting about anything except business, technology, or my volunteer activities with the Surfrider Foundation. But I will post an occasional status update to Facebook. I participate in some Facebook groups. Event pages, people will post an event on Facebook, and I'll say, yes, I'm attending, or, oh, maybe I can attend. So I do that kind of thing. But I do, on LinkedIn, I don't go in there and make daily updates. I've been on LinkedIn almost since the very beginning, and I really don't get business that way, but people find me and want to connect, and I connect. And, you know, so I've got probably 600 on there. But it's mostly people looking for jobs or, you know, or trying to network, or they want me to introduce them to someone, and I do that. You know, I don't pay for the LinkedIn Pro account. They offer, what is it? I don't even know. Is it 10 bucks a month or something? So all these are free, including Posterous. And as I say, I just thought I'd try using Posterous because I thought it might be a way for me to do some longer blogging. Then, you know, because I mean, my main blog, I'm lucky if I get on there to do a longer post once a month now, which is, you know, not good. But the way I justify it to myself is, you know, I'm doing 15 tweets a day, you know, at least, sometimes many more. And then on Facebook, I just occasionally update that, and LinkedIn gets updated with whatever I'm doing on Twitter.
Are you typically using your phone?
Yeah.
Your iPhone?
No, I actually, I'm sitting at my, this is my main computer, my only computer. I don't have a desktop. I've been on laptops for 15 years. And no, I do a lot on the web. But when I'm out on the go, when I'm in the car at stoplights, I'm always either looking at Twitter or tweeting. At stoplights. At stoplights. Or maybe when it's inching along. I did that tweet from the app when I left the Apple store last night as I was coming home from Southdale. So, you know, and I'm not saying that everybody needs to be on all these services. You know, it's, you know. Yes?
Yeah, assuming your company does have a topic that's interesting to a lot of people. So let's say your company does have a little blog and maybe a Twitter account. I guess the question I have is how do you create that awareness? Because when I saw that Twitter account up there, I saw, oh, again, 9,000 followers. Well, you know,
well, you know, a lot of people think, like on Twitter, the game is to have the most followers, but that's the celebrity thing. You know, that's Britney Spears and all them. They care about that. It's not really a race for followers. It's much more about the quality of your followers. So I have clients that only have, you know, a couple hundred followers on their Twitter account, and they're really just getting started with them over the last maybe 4 or 5 months. But by God, they are all quality followers. They're the analysts, or they're the reporters, or editors, or customers. You know, they're influentials. It's about getting to the influentials. It's not about the big number, really. I mean, I have 2,600 or something followers on Twitter. I can't keep up. There's no way I can keep up with all the, well, and I'm following 3,000. The best I can do is just scan and hope something jumps out at me, you know, and then but I have apps on my iPhone now where I can kind of favorite ones and follow the ones that are more important to me.
And the hopes would be maybe that would spread, so that maybe you only have 3 followers, but those people can influence you. I mean, for selling a product, it's all about the eyeballs. I mean, you know, at the beginning.
Sure. Yeah, it depends if you're in the consumer business or if you're in a niche B2B space, you know. But yeah, for consumer companies, you know, obviously you have to have big numbers. I mean, go look at Best Buy's Twitter account. You know, it's crazy. And they didn't start it all that long ago, you know, and it's probably north of a million or more by now, you know. But yeah, and the more, you know, the more followers you get, the more people are seeing what you're tweeting. But the game is, you know, you want people to retweet what you're saying too. And so that's one good metric. Oh, I got X number of retweets today. You know, I must be putting something out there of value. Anyone else? Yeah, Casey.
So your Twitter presence is Graham Thickens with a picture of your mug on it. It's not GT and H
no,
marketing.
Good question.
With the logo on it.
Yep.
Do you have an opinion now that you've been doing this for years? Do you have an opinion on
personal versus?
Yeah,
that's a very good question, and there are CEOs out there that still to this day, and I'm working with one now, Will Tom. I won't say his last name, but he has the ability to have his own personal blog on a number of topics that won't be attached to his company website, which is undergoing a transition right now. But he finally realized that, by God, they need a blog on their company site too. But that, so he's going to have 2 blogs. He's realized, you know, he's got a blog about flying and all that kind of stuff. He's a pilot, you know. So it's a call each company has to make. I didn't want my Twitter site to look, and I still don't, to look like it's a company hyping my thing. And so the link in my bio on my Twitter page is my blog. But from my blog, you can quickly get over to my company if you want to. There's a little section there that says what I do, my consulting services. So, you know, there's a certain amount of personal branding in here too, which is what our friends at Business Card are about. And go create your own free Business Card too right here. It's a great little service. You know, and in fact, I was telling Leif, do you guys remember hearing Leif Larson speak a few months ago about the future of social media? He's the founder of Business Card 2, a company called Workface. And we were talking about, there's a guy that I noticed that had done one of these that works for SAP, you know, big, huge software firm out west. And he created his own card on Business Card 2, and he talked about his work at SAP. But I said, there's a smart guy, because he realizes he's probably not always going to be at SAP. So he's out to promote his personal brand. Sure, he's at SAP right now, but, you know, the way things are in this day and age, you better be taking care of number one, you know. And then, you know, this is a worker bee I'm talking about here, not a CEO, but still, there are many CEOs that have their own standalone blogs on something unrelated to even their business. But there's always going to be a crossover. But the beautiful thing is, you can cross-link between the two blogs. So when Tom wants to write about tech on his personal blog, by God, that'll be cross-posted over to his company blog. You know. Are we reaching the end of... Okay, cool. Well, I'll hang around. And if anybody is interested in having me give this talk at their company, you know, I'm all ears. One more question?
What happens when Twitter goes bad?
You mean an individual tweet or a... Oh, a negative?
Yeah, I hate this product because yeah.
Well, that's a very good point. If the bigger you are with the more customers you have, the more you need somebody watching for those in real time. Somebody is sitting there watching and reacting to those. And if they aren't, the Twitter sphere or the blogosphere will attack that company like you won't believe. If somebody's got a legitimate complaint, and I see this all the time, I see major bloggers that will say, you know, Dell totally sucks, and, you know, there's a famous one for that. And that caused Dell to create a position at the company for a guy that did nothing but monitor people having bad experiences with Dell and quickly jumping on that so it didn't fester and you know, multiply. And, you know, Best Buy as a whole, 12th Force, have you heard about their Twitter Force that they call 12th Force? They've got, I don't know, 50 or 100 people. They're on Twitter all day long talking to customers. So it's customer service squared. Comcast is another one that was very famous for what they did with, it's called Comcast Cares. That's the name of their Twitter account. So thank you.